Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey there. Welcome to Seventh Heaven, a lesbian recap. I'm Lindsay, and I'm joined by my co-host and real-life partner, Carling. We're diving into the 90s hit drama through today's lens.
Get ready for our off-the-cuff commentary and peeling back the layers of the Camden family. We'll tackle everything from family rules, life lessons, and 90s fashion.
Join us every week for a lighthearted queer perspective and a trip down memory lane.
Whether you're a diehard fan or new to the show, this recap is for you.
So find us anywhere you get your podcasts at Seventh Heaven, a lesbian recap.
I'm not a doctor, obviously, but I'm her mom. And I really feel that the chemotherapy is killing her faster than the cancer is.
Hey, Michelle.
Hi, Carling.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
We're never as graceful when we record remotely.
I know.
We don't have our faces to stare at each other.
I'm also distracted by that picture behind you. Is it crooked or is it just like the way the computer is?
I think it's just the way the computer is.
Okay. That's fine.
For those listening, I'm at Lindsay's house and you're at your house and we have the video feature on.
Yeah.
And you're distracted by my background.
I have a real problem with pictures when they're crooked. And even at my husband's funeral, there was a picture on the wall that was crooked and I had to fix it.
Oh my God. I'm just like, hey, can you just pause real quick while I just okay.
Thanks. I'm like, I'm just going to be distracted by this picture the whole time. Could I just fix this?
Oh my God. That's funny. Yeah, I'm good. It's kind of, I was supposed to work all weekend and so we didn't have any recordings planned.
Yeah.
But because it was like a big community event for Culture Days and because COVID is just running rampant through our province.
Yeah.
And yeah, all like the healthcare system is virtually collapsing. We just decided we probably shouldn't hold a big community event and we shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Promote a bunch of people gathering. So it worked out pretty well because in the end, it was been rainy all weekend. So that would have been horrible to work outside.
Yeah, for
And my cousin came to town to go to a wedding. And so I'm dog sitting her dog. And then Lindsay's ex-husband went out of town actually for another wedding, not the same wedding.
Oh, that'd be weird.
And so, yeah. And so she's looking after his ginormous legs for days, 10-month-old puppy.
Aw.
And so I'm hanging out at her house while she works.
So how many dogs do you have right now?
I only have 5.
Oh, only. Okay.
I have Tony and Lola, which are mine. I have Nixon, which is Lindsay's. And then I have my cousin's dog, Trim, and her ex-husband's dog, Winston. I know. It's like a funny little ragtag bunch.
It really is.
Yeah. Aww. But anyway, that's my weekend. How's yours?
It's okay, I think. Yeah, it's like rainy and stuff. So we haven't been able to go out anywhere, really. We're meeting some friends at the park in a little bit. And my daughter's having a play date this afternoon. I'm just trying to keep my house clean. My dishwasher is broken again. So I've just been buried in dishes, which is just something I don't need to add to my pile.
Yeah. Like dishes are literally a thing that are just nonstop in your house with that many people anyway.
Yeah. And I did get like paper plates and like environmentalists come at me because I know it's not great, but there's only so many dishes that I can do in a day when I'm working and it's not fun. So yeah, just working. That's about it.
I know you started driving for Skip the Dishes.
I did. I wanted to pick up another job because why not?
Yeah. I mean, you're a solo parent with five kids.
Yeah. So I needed to make a little bit more money and wanted to try it. And it's actually super fun.
I think it's like so perfect for you because you can listen to podcasts. You're alone in your car without your kids.
Yeah.
You're just like scooting around town.
I
am. You live in a small town. So it's not like you're like going really far.
I was thinking about that. Like I would hate it if I lived in like Calgary because I think the delivery zone would be so much bigger. And in my town, it's like you can get from one side to the other in 10 minutes. So it's perfect. And all the restaurants are close. And so I can do lots of deliveries. I did a bunch yesterday afternoon and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I don't really know like what else is going on.
Well, we had Evelyn's episode last week, mm-hmm. and we announced that we have her notebook for sale, and we've had quite a few people already purchase them. So if you want to purchase one the month of September, a portion of the proceeds are going towards the Team Evelyn Foundation to help other kiddos who've been diagnosed with cancer and families to support them. So it's been
that's been great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. So if you, I think you can go from our website or Instagram to get the link.
Yeah, the link is in our bio on Instagram. I think though, if you just go to Etsy and type in, I did not sign up for this, it should pop up. And
it seems like people are getting them really fast.
Yes, they are. Yeah.
That's great. Cause it's kind of like a direct ship. Like we don't have to do as much on our end.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I love that. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so because September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month.
Yeah.
You know what else is really exciting?
Tell me.
I love what just like when we just partner with anybody. But last week on our Patreon, we interviewed maybe the loveliest human ever, Paul from Newton's Nuggets.
Amazing. I love him.
And yeah, he's like a mind reader and his job and a magician and his like he's literally built a business out of having people hire him to break into their companies to like show some of the weak points, either digitally, physically, staffing wise, everything.
I described it as like a secret shopper, but instead he's a secret robber.
Yeah, he's a secret robber. We're gonna have to go there and work and like do a job with him.
I know. I love how they say that. Do a job. I totally want to do one. It'd be so fun.
I love that.
It's like Ocean's 11 or like Italian job. That's all I think about.
I know. It's so funny. So we're doing a giveaway of his book, Mental Theft. And we're going to do a draw of all of our Patreon names. So if you've been thinking about joining the Patreon or you've never heard of it and you're wondering what I'm talking about, it is a monthly subscription and a really great way to support the work that we do. And as a thank you, we provide you with two bonus episodes every month that you will never find on the main feed. And so Paul's is just one of 37 episodes that you get instant access to right away when you become a Patreon member. Mm-hmm. So on October 1st, we're going to do a draw of all of our patron family members and give away his book, a signed copy of his book.
Oh, awesome. That's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm really excited. And he's going to send us a copy to read.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he was not impressed with us in the end with our lack of security in our own lives. Yeah. So Paul, we will read your book and we will do better.
And we will report back.
Yes, we will.
Amazing. All right. Well, let's get on to today's episode with Carrie.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hello, Carrie.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're good. It's like kind of like a cold Sunday today.
It is cold today, yeah.
It is quite chilly, yes.
I don't mind it, though. It's been really, really hot.
Yeah.
I like to be warm, so I would like it a little warmer.
Yeah, it's like we can't seem to find a middle here, like because we all live in the same area.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it's either way, way, way too hot. Or it's raining and very cold.
Yeah.
Like, why can't we just have like a middle sunny with a light breeze?
The joys of living in Alberta.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is. And it's been so smoky from the BC wildfires.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh, well. Good. We met up with you through Instagram and we just like love, love, love what you do. And so we're super stoked to have you on our show.
Well, I'm super excited to be here, and I've been listening to your podcast, and I love the fact that you guys interview people of different walks of life and hear what their story is, and I think there's a lot of information to be learned that way.
And yeah, awesome.
It's really interesting. Like, I just love the personal touch of it.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. Well, why don't we dive right in? I'd love it if you could introduce yourself and tell everybody a bit about you, and then we'll get right into it.
Okay. So my name is Carrie Stock. I am a childhood cancer survivor. When I was 24 years old, I started a charity that helps families who are struggling to make ends meet when their child has cancer. And wow. since then, we're close to dispersing over $1 million through our program over the last 12 years. And it's been pretty exciting work that we get to do. And we work with social workers at the Alberta Children's Hospital. So that has been really nice. Yeah, it's just been, I feel so fulfilled doing the type of work that I get to do every day.
Absolutely. That's really taking your kind of situation and turning it around and making it into something good and positive for other people. That's amazing.
Yeah, I love that part of it. Although I totally understand that not everyone is built to do that. Not everyone can take their experience and do something with it. But in my case, like, I've always kind of known that I've wanted to do something that changed the world mm-hmm. in a way, or the world around me. When I saw that there was this gap of families that aren't being helped, I just wanted to make a difference in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's something that people don't really think about. I think especially here in Canada, like, we have universal health care. And I think a lot of times my perception a while back was, oh, like, everything's just taken care of. You don't have to worry about it. But I don't think exactly. about, like, losing your job or having to go from two incomes to one and parking at the hospital and the meals. And, like, you know, it just goes on and on. Mm-hmm. We interviewed Heather, who shared Evelyn's story, you know, even just talking about some of the things that insurance didn't cover uh-huh. that seemed so obvious, and it really adds up.
Evelyn was actually one of our cancer kids in our program. So we know Heather really well and her family, and have been involved with them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so great.
Yeah. That's got to be the hard side of it, though, when you lose a child. That's difficult. I mean, for your...
Definitely.
You get so close to the family and the kids, right?
Definitely. I don't know how, but people always say, like, oh, it must be so hard to do what you do. And yes, at times it is hard. I'm not a robot. But in the second sense, like, I'm kind of built for it. I've always had a mantra that we're there to help the journey. And we can't change the ending of
that's beautiful.
What it goes to. But if we can impact their journey, then that's what we're there for. And I really try and keep that in mind with every single family that we help and we meet. At times it's hard. You know, I have to re-remind myself of my mantra. And for some weird reason, I'm kind of wired this way. And I think it's from having cancer at a young age, losing a lot of friends to cancer, over the years that I became friends with. And I don't know, it just kind of built me into this person that can be able to be there. And I feel very fortunate for that because I love what I get to do.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But you definitely are right when you say that we're lucky to be in this part of the world that financially, when we're going through it, you know, my cancer would have cost my mom over $1 million if she was in a different part of the world. She accidentally, like, saw a bill one time when I was going through treatment, and it wasn't meant to be sent to her or something. And it just broke down the cost of everything. And partway through, or whatever, during the treatment, I was already at $1 million. And that doesn't include like everything since then and the follow-up and all that. So we're very fortunate to live in Canada.
So could you tell us a bit about your story with surviving childhood cancer?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it really shaped me for who I am. So at 13 months old, every time my mom sat me up, I would cry. You know, being just a newborn, you can't express what's going on or that you're in pain or anything, but she'd sit me up and I would cry and cry and cry. And she took me to the Children's here one time in Calgary, and they said, oh, she's just a cranky baby. I mean, you got to keep in mind, though, that's back in 1980s. The technology maybe wasn't as strong, or, you know,
yeah,
we've evolved a lot since then. And it's not to say things don't get misdiagnosed now, but she took me again when we were visiting family in BC, and then one more time in Calgary. And all three times they just said, oh, she's a cranky baby. One day my mom was changing my diaper, and my stomach like bloated out and became rock hard to the point where it was very obvious that something was wrong. So she
and did your me. Were you, are you an only child, or did your mom have kids before you?
So I'm the oldest. I have a brother who's a year behind me. So she was pregnant with my brother at the time.
Oh wow!
Yeah. But it's not like she had another baby to compare.
No,
saying like, so, oh, this could be normal. Like,
oh yeah, that's a good point. Seemed, yeah. So yeah. She was a first time mom. Yeah. She took me to her family doctor, and the family doctor is like, oh, you need to go to the hospital right now. I'm calling an ambulance from here.
Oh God.
So they brought me in, and not long after doing some tests, they found out that I had a cancer called Rhabdomyosarcoma sarcoma, which is a really long word for a soft tissue tumor. And mine was in my abdomen. And back in 1980s, it was very rare, this cancer. So they actually, because I was so sick by the time that they caught it, and it was the size of a grapefruit in my abdomen.
And you were so little, 8 months old. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. It's crazy that it got missed for that long. I mean, and my mom did everything she could to figure out what happened, like what was going on when I had it. But it slid under the radar for whatever reason. And so, yeah, it was the size of a grapefruit in my abdomen. I was so sick that day and the cancer was so rare back then. Weirdly enough, I Googled it, and it presents more in males of people who are of African descent and more adults. And I'm like, that is not my case at all. I think, I think some of the stats have changed now. I've seen a lot of young kids come through our program with Rhabdomyosarcoma sarcoma, and a lot of them are young. And so they actually, back then, they called in a priest, read me my last rites, and told my mom, you know, your daughter is not making it, probably through the night.
What year was this?
So this was 1985.
Oh my gosh. That's
so terrible. Scary. And I just try to think back to in the 80s, there just wasn't that, like the treatments, the diagnostics, so of course I think the prognosis would be so much worse.
Yeah, exactly. And my mom was just distraught because this all just happened so quick. And for some reason, I made it through the night and made it through another night and another night. And they put me on different medications. And eventually I became strong enough that I could start chemotherapy. So I did that for 2.5 years, and it was very grueling. My mom told me, like, it made me very, very sick, and I wasn't allowed to be exposed to anybody. People had to be very careful. Like, the common cold could be a huge problem. So I was very isolated, and my mom was pregnant with my brother. So partway through treatment, she gave birth to my brother. And right around this time, my mom and my dad, right before I got diagnosed with cancer, they separated. She said one day she gave birth at one hospital and then drove to the Children's Hospital to come see me.
Wow.
That was her life. Yeah. And my dad wasn't really in the picture. So she did a lot of it on her own. Like he would visit at times, but it was really a lot of it. I just remember it just being me and her through everything. It's quite interesting because I was really, really young. So at some point, my memories now kick in and replaces her words in the story of what I remember. Mm-hmm. All of it was like, you know, people have different memories of them being home or at the park with friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. Mine was hospital rooms and being in treatment and remembering what that was like. But I still would try and, you know, as I went through my journey, like I personally don't feel that my cancer journey ended until I was about 7, because I did some chemotherapy. I did a lot of different surgeries. And so it took a while for it to all be done. But, you know, I still took time to be a kid when I could. I remember hiding a can of silly string behind my back and waiting till the doctor came in and got him, and, you know, fun little times. But yeah, a lot of those first memories are all replaced with hospital stuff. And it's not really the procedures or anything or the pain. I just remember the fun stuff, or the always being with my mom and always feeling safe. I never felt scared. I don't think at that time it really registered with me that I could pass away from cancer. I just always felt safe. My mom was protecting me. I just felt like I had an angel with me.
And was your mom working, or?
So she was working when I got diagnosed, and I think she was going to school part-time or something too, or in school or working part-time, but she had to quit. Obviously, she needed to be at the hospital every day with me. So now she's on unemployment, or employment insurance, I think they call it. But that's not a lot of money. And especially when, and we see this a lot with our cancer families now, that income decreases and expenses increase. So things like parking passes at the hospital, that's now a new added expense every month that you didn't have to pay for before. Certain medications that aren't covered by your health plan or your work plan or Alberta Healthcare, certain procedures and things like that. So it was really, really tough on her. And it definitely took a toll on her, for sure. Like I definitely, she has a few things that she struggles with even to this day. Like she developed fibromyalgia, which hers is a shooting pain in her upper arm and shoulder. And it's was caused by stress or a traumatic event. And it makes it hard sometimes for her to move in certain ways or pick up items. And sometimes when she is stressed in her everyday life, it flares up and gets really bad. The other thing that has affected her was the, she has a sleeping disorder now, because I would get sick throughout the night. And so she never went through all the realms of sleep properly, because she was always sort of listening at the upper level for if I needed help. And I did, I'd get sick all night long. So she was always up with me, and she never, now she doesn't fully go into like realm sleep. Sometimes a bit of her memory can be affected, or can be more tired than usual and stuff like that. And that stuff she'll live with for the rest of her life. But things that she, you know, would go, she'd go back and make the same decisions again.
Absolutely. I can't even, I mean, my first thought is your mom is like a superhero, because
I think so
to be a first time mom, to have a little baby who's so sick, to be pregnant, to, you know, not have a partner. And I mean, that's unbelievable to me. And, you know, it's amazing what she sacrificed for, you know, for your health and for your safety. And she kept you feeling safe the whole time, when on the inside, she was probably so scared.
Yes.
That's for amazing.
Sure. For sure. She was such an advocate for me, and I never knew anything could be like, to turn out bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I really feel like she's an angel. I really do. Yeah, we're very close even to this day. Like,
yeah. Did you know of any kind of assistance back then for your mom when it came to having a child with cancer in the hospital?
So way back then, there was a program that existed but doesn't exist anymore. And she was able to get babysitting for my brother.
Okay.
For at no cost from a government program, so that someone could be with him while we were at the hospital all the time. That did help her a lot. And actually, funny enough, the babysitter who babysat my brother, my mom became best friends with, and still is best friends with in life to this day.
Oh, wow.
They've developed That's a very amazing. Close friendship. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was one good thing that turned out. But yeah, that program doesn't exist anymore. I don't know why.
I couldn't imagine juggling a newborn baby in a hospital with a child who's sick from cancer. I mean, that's just unimaginable.
Well, even yeah. we talked to, I don't know if you heard Maddie's story, but Allison talked about having a newborn baby. I think he was 3 months old when Maddie had to move to
hospice.
Palliative care. Yeah. And just the programs and services now available must be so much more enhanced than what people like your mom had access to.
Totally. And there's still a lot of work to do there. It's not a perfect system yet. I don't know. This could be wrong, but my feelings is like the government provides less and less funding for things. And that's when charities have kind of stepped in to fill some of those gaps.
Yeah.
That's just my personal take on the matter, but there are things, but it definitely as a whole, I think could be improved, you know, but it's all about all things cost money. So
yeah,
absolutely.
yeah.
Wow. And so do you remember, so after you were going, how long did you do chemo for?
I did chemo for 2.5 years. And that's where the story is kind of takes a weird turn, because back then the protocol was for 3 years for the type of cancer that I had. Whoa. But my mom had said I was so sick, like so, so sick, that she met with my doctors and said, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but I'm her mom. And I really feel that the chemotherapy is killing her faster than the cancer is. Like, she's on the verge of death here. You can see it. And she said, I really think you guys need to consider pulling her off the chemotherapy treatments. It took a lot for her to basically tell doctors, you know, I think you guys should be doing this. Because she also could come with the weight of that decision, could be detrimental. In this case, the doctors agreed with her and said, yeah, we think you're right. We're going to pull her off treatment. So they did that. And then they went in and surgically removed the tumor after that. From there was kind of a lot of surgeries that happened after that, just kind of getting everything back in place. And it took until I was 7 to completely be done. I was in and out of the hospital kind of until that time. And they actually did a surgery on me that had only been performed 2 other times in the world. So I'm the 3rd person who's ever had this particular surgery. And I was the 1st child in Canada. So they actually flew us to the Toronto hospital, the sick kids, to stay there to kind of work things out. But yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. So when everything was said and done, like it's been good. Like my health has been good since then. Mm-hmm. For the most part, I do have problems with my kidneys because they were in the shooting range of where cancer was. So I have some scar tissue that has built up on my kidneys, and they don't quite function at 100%. They actually function at about 50% function level, which is still okay.
How does that impact your day-to-day life?
Well, I sometimes get kidney infections, and so that's been tough because I get pretty sick when I get those, and I'm kind of in and out of the hospital as we're dealing with them. And then a little over 5 or 6 years ago, I had some cysts that were growing on both of my kidneys, and on one kidney in particular, it was really bad to the point where it was impeding its function. So it was actually not filtering out everything to the urine, and it was actually making it hard for the other kidney to do its job. So it was actually kind of also a crazy story because I went in and I had been sick, like getting really sick for a couple of years. And I was like, okay, I know something's up. I brought my mom to the appointment with me and they misdiagnosed me. And that's kind of its own crazy story because the doctor who had done this surgery for me so many years ago that I looked up to was the one who misdiagnosed me and told me and my mom that day in his office after looking at some of my tests and said, oh, she has cancer again. He just looked at it and thought it looked similar and jumped the gun and basically said, yeah, Carrie has cancer again. And I remember having to call my husband who was at work and tell him, you know, they say I have cancer again. But what was weird about this one is I felt a deep gut feeling, and I don't get those very often, so it was kind of nice that I got one, that it wasn't cancer. And so I said, they're saying it's cancer, but I don't think it's cancer. They have to do a biopsy to find out more. So when they did the biopsy, it came back non-cancerous. That was a big relief. And I knew it. I just knew it. And yeah. I think the doctor really jumped the gun by saying that to us. I think he should have waited till he had more information. He's now retired. He was getting pretty old by the time that I'd seen him. Like, he was getting to that retiring age. It was really hard on me because I really looked up to him when I was younger. And then for him to make such a big mistake in my eyes that mm-hmm. my mom called our family and told them it's back. And I was admitted that day. And so the long story short was they ended up removing my right kidney so that the left one can work better. Okay. And now I'm at the point where I feel pretty good. I still have cysts on the other one, but they aren't really growing, or if they are, it's such a minimal amount that it's not affecting me. I still get my kidney infections every once in a while that kind of take me out for a few days, and I feel like garbage, but then I bounce right back. And, you know, I'm very grateful that this is all that's left out of it. Like, if yeah. you saw me in person, you would never know, oh, this person, you know, had cancer and went through a huge battle.
Yeah.
So I feel very fortunate, and I'll take this any day of the week if that's what it is. My one kidney that's left, it's going to be watched very carefully. And if it ever drops down where that cyst comes too big and causes problems, or the kidney function from the scar tissue of having cancer and getting kidney infections now, if it ever becomes more of a problem, the thing of going on dialysis and then a transplant will be an option that we'll have to go through.
Yeah.
Has that always felt, I get like, I guess you can't speak for what it's like to not grow up like this because this is your only reality, but what's it been like growing up? Do you always feel like you're on the cusp of getting news that you're sick, or?
Not really that, but my body like reacts really weirdly, and I get all these kind of weird ailments that were like, oh yeah, like no one has this happen to them, and then it will happen to me, you know what I mean? At the same time, I'm thankful my body has brought me through all this. Like,
yeah,
I can look at the fact, like, I have tons of things that I deal with, like, you know, I had to get implants for my teeth because not all of them, but six of them, because when I was on chemotherapy, it wore down the enamel on my teeth. And then I was more susceptible to cavities. And, you know, I wear glasses, not a big deal. But then I look at my husband, he's never had health concerns or anything like that in his life. But he's just like, and then I wear hearing aids because the certain chemos changed, like make it harder for me to hear. And it, in fact, impacted my hearing. So it's just like, I have all the things and my husband has none of them. And I use his health benefits at work for all my stuff. It's funny.
I find that so interesting because you don't think about, again, I think people think, oh, you had cancer and you either pass away or you beat it and you're fine and life goes on. Yeah. But I don't think that a lot of people really factor in all of the lifelong things that you might have to deal with as a result of.
Oh, for sure. And like my best friend, he went through cancer and a 2-time cancer survivor, and he deals with daily migraines that are debilitating to the point where he cannot work. Sometimes he can't even get up to walk himself to the bathroom or eat something. And I mean, people would never know unless we told them, you know, that there are these lifelong things that we deal with. But then, I mean, in my case, I'm very thankful. I feel like mine are very minimal. They don't impact my day to day. So I just feel very lucky.
And what was it like for your little brother? Was he like a healthy, typical?
He was, yeah. And you know, what's weird with kids' cancer is some adult cancers, they can trace to certain things. But with kids' cancers, they don't know why their body does what it does, like why it creates the cancer. And so mine was just like, the way that they explained it to my mom in the hospital is, when I was growing, your cells split and divide into two. But one of mine split and divided into three. Oh. And so that third one ended up being the cancerous one. And then that kept dividing. Like, they really don't know why a little kid would, would get cancer. Yeah. And for my brother, he was very, he's healthy. Like I mentioned, he was passed along with babysitters or family members who would watch him. Yeah, we're very close to this day, and I'm very lucky that he turned out to be such an awesome human.
Absolutely. So how did your kind of organization come about? How did it start, and how long has it been going on for?
So in high school, I was really quiet about having cancer and stuff. I got bullied in school about having cancer, and people thought they could, their kid could get cancer, or their child thought they could get cancer. And so I kept it really quiet. Like in the beginning, you know, I did try and tell some friends that I had at school, but it quickly got out of hand and like rumors started or whatever. And so as I changed schools, I just never told anybody because I just didn't want to be back in that position again. My family moved, which is why I switched school. So in middle school and high school, I hid a lot of that, or I would maybe tell my friends, oh yeah, I used to have cancer, but I don't tell them with what I was dealing with now. It wasn't until after high school, like kind of in high school and after high school, I started volunteering with a lot of different organizations, different charities that dealt with cancer, and went to different conferences and raised money and became involved in a young adult group that had like-minded cancer survivors who also wanted to make a difference, and was in that program for a while. And I just, I learned a lot from volunteering for these different charities and being a part of these different groups at the time. And I developed some lifelong friendships where I met survivors and friends. And I went to cancer camp a lot when I was younger, so a lot of my friendships came from that. I always felt like once all that stuff sort of came to an end with that group, I felt like I wanted to still, I was meant to do something in the world. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading an article in People magazine, which is kind of really random. And it was Hero of the Month or something. And it was a story about this lady. She started a charity. It's now been renamed, but at the time it was called the Andre River of Life Foundation. Her son had not survived cancer, and it was so difficult for their family. The husband ended up buried a child, ended up taking his own life not long like after the son passed away. I don't know what all the circumstances were, but she received some money from the passing or something. I don't know if it was insurance or how that worked, but then she invested that money, and she used the money investment, and she would help families financially to pay bills. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I wish someone was there. Cause when my mom went through it, like she explained how hard it was at times to make ends meet, you know, deciding which bills you'll pay or begging, you know, electricity not to be cut off, or her having $20 and having to buy enough groceries to feed us for a week. I know the financial side was so difficult for her, being a single mom and being on welfare. It didn't really cover enough. It doesn't cover enough. She just really, really struggled. So when I read this article, it was like this light bulb just lit up in my head. And I'm like, we need this here in Canada. Like this was it's from someone in the States. There is nobody supporting families financially. And I did my research and I talked to the social workers at the hospital, and I said, I think I want to bring this program to Calgary. I want to start a program that helps families financially. So we had to work out what that would look like. And I, at 23 years old, actually right before I got married, I said to my husband, I think I want to start a nonprofit, like a charity that helps families with cancer. So I think before you marry me, you need to know I'm not getting into any kind of, no wealth is coming my way. Like, I hope you're okay with not being millionaires, because if that's really a goal of yours in life to have the fine things and, you know, big house and cars, like you're going to have to make that happen for yourself. Yeah, I'm out. Oh, funny. And he of course was like, no, definitely. I support you. So I applied to get a charitable status, and I was very diligent. And like it takes a long time to get a charitable status in Calgary or in Canada, sorry. So I really stayed on the ball as far as like keeping on top of all the paperwork. I got really smart with it because they used to mail out, I think they still do, like when they have questions about what you submitted. And as soon as I got that letter, I would have an answer back to them, but instead of mailing it, I'd fax it. And so I was always on top of their desk. Like, you know, they would always have their answer within 24 hours. So I would kind of work through the different questions that they had. And the charity is a whole other feat because you're kind of having to predict what your charity will be like before you do it.
Right.
Yeah. You kind of don't know how it all falls into place. And so I actually met with, I called and talked to the mom of the Andre River of Life Foundation. They're now renamed to Compassion Can't Wait. And I talked to her and I said, like, look, I'm not your competition. I'm in Canada. Yeah. I just would love like an hour or two of your time just to ask questions. Like, why invent a wheel that you already have in motion? So I sat there on the phone and I picked her brain. And I'm so grateful she allowed me to do that because I found out what worked, what didn't work. How did you set this up for this? Or what did you do for that? How do you problem solve this kind of question? How do you pay these kind of bills? And although we didn't do exactly everything that they do to a T, it helped give me experience that I would have had like all the spots where they fell short or struggled through, you know, it was easier that I had advice. Yeah, and so I'm very thankful that she talked to me that day because it really gave me some good answers to questions that would have been really hard for us to figure out or have experienced a lot of growing pain while we figured those out. And it's not to say that the charity doesn't experience growing pain, because definitely not.
Yeah.
So at 24 years old, I started this nonprofit, and now we are helping families, and we help roughly, we process about 250 to 300 applications a year from families. And so they're all social workers at the Alberta Children's Hospital that send us these applications.
Okay.
In it is a lot of the story about the family, you know, like their basic details, their situation and their diagnosis. And then included in that is the bill that the family is struggling to pay for. We cover things like rent, gas, groceries, parking passes is one of the big ones, groceries or gas going to and from the hospital. Mm-hmm. And every family is slightly different in what we support them with, because not every family that has cancer needs financial support. Some right. families are, you know, they are well off in life and they don't need access to the program. But we really go to help the families who are really struggling kind of at the bottom and just mm-hmm. try and support them through our program. And so sometimes it's a one-time ask as a transitional thing to get them to and from different phases of their journey, or sometimes mm-hmm. it's ongoing support, depending on what the family's going through.
Where is it today? How many people are you helping? And where do you see it going in the next 2 to 5 years?
That's such a crazy question, because my answer is, where do I see it going in 2 to 5 years? I'm not sure. We know we will still have a program. There will always be a place there at the Alberta Children's Hospital. It's a matter of now we're wondering, should we expand? Should we grow our reach? So right now we're helping cancer kids and their families, but now we're starting to entertain questions like, there are so many families who have long-term illnesses that might not be cancer. So do mm-hmm. we want to expand to be a children's overall charity and help mm-hmm. families who have like kids that have big medical issues who are in the system for a long time?
Yeah.
For many years, not just like going in for a broken arm. We're talking like, you know, big life-changing illnesses.
Yeah.
Or should we expand across Canada and help cancer kids in different, like have a helping families in different parts of Canada where there is an Alberta children or where there is a children's hospital? So our board is currently trying to come up with a strategic plan. We're doing some planning and researching and kind of figuring out where things are going to take us. But for right now, our program in Calgary is so solid. Like, I think we've helped just over 1,400 families since we started. And as I told you earlier, we're close to giving out over $1 million. I think we're at the 900,000 some odd money dispersed to cancer families and their kids.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's so incredible.
And one thing I love about our program is we don't actually so if you, let's say, had a child who had cancer, we don't just cut you a check. It's not like, oh, here you go. Like, here's a check. We actually pay the bill at the institution in which it's owed. So if it is a medication or medical supplies, we put in a billing letter to that pharmacy and they bill us directly. If it's a parking pass, we pay and get that parking pass from Alberta Health Services directly. If it's rent because a family's child just passed away and they need some time to grieve, we'll pay the landlord. Wow. So we always know that the money is going exactly where we intended. And that's one reason why I just think that this program is so awesome. And I'm totally biased by that.
No, but as you should be, that's really incredible. And so what's the best way, if people are listening to this, for the folks who are in Alberta and maybe want to donate specifically to you, what's the best way for them to do that? Or if they want to just help out?
Yeah, so you can visit our website at www.helpingfamilieshandlecancer.com. But there are tons of ways to help out. You can become a volunteer. You can make a donation. You can hook us up with friend or family member or your place of business that might want to make an in-kind donation for an event we're having. Or maybe you know of a company that might want to sponsor an event that we're having. Mm-hmm. Or you might belong to a group or a business that gives out money to charities. So by making us aware of the grant, and we can walk through the paperwork, but there are a lot of word of mouth referrals that come from grants because a lot of businesses like to donate where their employees to organizations that their employees care about.
Yeah.
And so sometimes people, like, I had a friend that I went to high school with, and she goes, "Hey, I work at this company, they have a grant application. Can you help me fill it out?" I'm like, "Sure." And she sent it to me. I filled it out. She submitted it. And we got a grant that went towards our care program. So
amazing.
So that's another way that people can help. Or if they know of a golf tournament or a fundraiser or an event that's looking for a new charity to sponsor, that's another way. But yeah, there's lots of different ways to get involved. You can come volunteer with us. We're always busy here, so there's always something to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really great. And I think it's always so wonderful to give people a variety of ways that they can help depending on what their capacity to give is, whether it's time or resources or just connecting people that might want or be able to help out.
Exactly. I mean, you may not be in the financial position to help out directly, but maybe you know someone who does, or have a friend who, you know, their company donates to a lot of charities, and you want to throw our name in the hat and see if it can get picked up. The other thing is to come out to one of our fundraising events. We, before the pandemic and now once things kind of resume here, next year we're hoping to have one of our annual events, which is a art exhibit that we host. So we have about 100 artists that donate an art piece, and then it's not a silent auction, but more like an art exhibit and sale. So there's a price and there's a bio about the artist. And then we sell the artwork and we raise money for our cancer kids. So come out to one of our art exhibits and come have some food and a glass of wine and see cool art. It's not like a snooty, oh, what do you see in this picture? it's actually like a great community of people. And we always have two cancer families who speak at the event every year. One of them was Evelyn Roy before Heather Roy before her daughter Evelyn passed away. She spoke at our art exhibit that fall, and then her daughter passed away some months later.
Wow, that's so amazing. I don't know you, but I'm so proud of you.
Absolutely.
That's just incredible. What a great accomplishment. And
it's just like I said before, it's just such an incredible way to take something that you've been through and turn it around and just help countless other people. We have had friends that have experienced loss of their children, or that their children have been going through cancer. And to think about
those little things that you don't think about, the parking passes, yeah. the, you know, food gift cards, things like that. It's so obvious, but it really is just something that you don't think about that they're needing. And yeah. it's so important to have, you know, places like you that can provide that for them. And then we can give you a platform to share that so other people can,
yeah.
can help.
Yeah. yeah. And that's so exciting. Like, this is the first podcast I've ever done. And I loved what you guys, the stories that you guys share. And I think that they're so important. So I definitely wanted to reach out. And in regards to things that people don't think about, Heather once said it best about her time in the hospital with Evelyn. And she said, sometimes getting a parking pass, it's not just about it is about the financial impact, but it's not. It's one less thing that parent has to worry about.
Yes.
So she says, like, when you're when you go to the hospital for a checkup or something that you think is going to be quick, you don't have to run to the time meter to put more money in the thing and keep your eye on the clock. And it's just one less ball that you're juggling in the air. And she said, and sometimes that day she could use the money to buy a much needed coffee that she Absolutely. Needed to get her through the day. And Absolutely. I was like, that is such a good point. Like, you just yeah. don't. And sometimes just knowing that someone is there and that people care, that people mm-hmm, care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's so impactful. And I really wish something existed like this for my mom. Mm-hmm. And so now when I get applications, I really view it as, you know, I want to treat them the way I wish someone would have treated my mom and kind of help support them through it. And, you know, I feel very blessed to be able to do the work that I do. Like, it's kind of crazy because I knew I wanted to do something, but I never knew that this was it. And I had a very promising job taking over my mom's family business. You know, we're proud of me that I stepped out from underneath that and decided to go a different way and to do this. But I look back and it's kind of crazy to think of everything that's been accomplished so far and all the dreams we have for the future and just to make more of a difference. I think, it's really exciting.
That's amazing.
Well, we'll make sure to link all of this info in our show notes. We'll put it on social media and tag you in it.
Awesome.
Yeah, this episode will come out in September, which is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, obviously.
You know. Oh, that's so perfect. I was wondering about that.
We have Heather and Evelyn's story the week before that. So
awesome. So I think, they are such a, I just love that family so much. We actually did a fundraiser with them that blew up, and it was about parking passes on the 1 year anniversary of her daughter's passing.
She wanted to
provide 100 parking passes for families for our charity through the program. So she asked for her supporters to step up to the plate. I'm like gonna cry as I say this, but they funded 447 passes.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just something that was like super exciting for her to be able to wake up on that morning and just that whole week leading up, instead of it being dread, it was such, it's, don't get me wrong, there, you know, she definitely struggled, but it was a little lighter, just a little lighter.
Wow, that's incredible.
And she was so excited every time we were just like smashed out a new goal and raised the amount of parking passes that we were funding. It was just like, I think we had 100 parking passes funded in the first 24 hours of releasing the 1 week challenge to get to that day where she could wake up and have such good news.
Oh,
and so we'll definitely be doing that fundraiser again in the spring.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's one other way incredible. That people can help support, which is to follow us on social media, because it's not just about a number. It's like people get to hear about what we do and what is upcoming. But a lot of the time when we're writing grants or funds from corporations and stuff, they want to know that you have a big social media following.
Right.
So even just giving us a follow is just like, it helps, that helps the charity.
Yeah. You know? And that's something and people share can do us with in 2 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. 2 seconds. And it makes all the difference to us, you know? Yeah.
That's so great. Well, thank you so much for taking time on your weekend to, I know people in nonprofit don't really ever get weekends, so.
No.
but we really appreciate it. You guys, the work you do is really important, and we're so happy to help spread the message.
Thank you. Every chance I get to help spread the message, I will always do. So
absolutely.
You know, it doesn't make a difference to me if it's day or night or 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm taking your phone call.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
Thanks, ladies. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.
You guys too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Carling.
How sweet is Carrie?
I know. She's so sweet. We have another person to add to the list of people we need to meet in real life. And she's local. And our list
our list of local people is growing, which is nice because we are more likely to be able to see them sooner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than later.
Uh-huh. She's doing amazing work for the community.
Yeah, I love that.
Me too.
So much. What else was I going to say? We have some like really exciting things coming up.
Tell me.
We are just booked solid with interviews with really incredible people. And we just slid in another interview that's going to come out around Halloween, which I'm really excited about. One of a girl that I've known for a long time reached out and offered. So she is a medium and intuitive, and I'm forgetting all the words, but basically she does readings and it's so cool. And she offered to do a reading for me and you.
I know. I'm so scared.
I know. I did mine last night and it was so good.
I'm so nervous.
I'll be there with you.
Yeah.
It'll be okay. Like have a couple drinks. It was really, really good. So we're going to interview her as one of our two Halloween specials this year.
I know that's so
exciting. I feel like I know we're only in the middle of September, but everybody should get excited for the week before Halloween. We're interviewing somebody who's a paranormal investigator, and that's scary.
That is so scary.
I'm like already scared. And then the week after, we're going to have my friend, and she's going to do a little giveaway of her readings.
That's amazing.
So stay tuned for that. And I don't know, we're up to so much stuff with the Evelyn notebook. What? We are up to so much stuff like the Evelyn notebook and just all the organizations that people talk about, as well as our own projects and ways to support us. So I think people should really, if they haven't already, follow us on Instagram is the big one, but also check out like our TikTok, our Patreon, our Facebook.
I wanted to say something that we are trying to align a lot of our months with, you know, Childhood Cancer Month and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we try to post a lot of things that are, you know, we just posted some things for the National Suicide Prevention Day. So if you guys have an organization or have a cause that you know about that's coming up, you know, it's that month or that day, reach out to us and we can do a post or we can do an interview and try to line it up with the month that it's supposed to be in.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you're going to go do some play dates.
Yeah.
And I am going to walk these five dogs.
Okay.
And
sounds fun.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good week.
We'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.